The HDXT AfriCast is sponsored by Neotel, South Africa's first converged communications network operator. Neotel, inspiring possibilities. It's Friday, the 1st of August, 2014, and time for the first inaugural episode of the HDXT AfriCast. Thanks for joining us. If you're wondering what the HDXT AfriCast is, let me quickly prefix it by letting you know that it's going to be a daily podcast rounding up some of the hottest tech topics affecting the South African and the African market. There'll be some news, there'll be some reviews, there'll be some opinions. There might even be a little bit of gaming news thrown in here and there. And the whole idea is that there's an audio resource for techies and people that are interested in tech to listen to on a daily basis, weekdays only, of course, about 15 or 20 minutes long, and just recapping the interesting stuff that you should know about what's going on in the South African and African tech space. Joining me for this first episode, of course, it wouldn't be a first episode of anything HDXT Africa related without our esteemed editor-in-chief, Mr. Adam Oxford. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Brett. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. And joining us on the far side of the table, also Mr. Charlie Fripp, our news hound. Charlie's the guy that gets stuck into all of the news angles that Adam throws his way. Hello, Charlie.
Good afternoon.
Cool. So let's jump straight into it then. And the most interesting story for me this week, of course, has been the relaunch of M-Pesa. That, in fact, happened yesterday. So today is a Friday. That happened on Thursday. Adam, you were at the launch. Tell us a bit about the relaunch of M-Pesa. It was something that came into South Africa. It's been successful elsewhere in Africa. And now they're hoping with a couple of changes to the service, it's going to be massively successful in South Africa.
Yeah, well, M-Pesa itself launched, I think it was 2006 in Kenya. In Kenya, and was originally an extension of sending money via SMS. I forget exactly what the original concept was a lot more complex than it turned out to be.
Well, the bottom line was, Kenya's a market where they've got a big migrant workforce, right? So what happens is a number of people, and from a rural perspective, travel to urban areas. They do a lot of work there, but of course, the main intention of them doing that is to send money back home to family members, right? And this was predominantly aimed at allowing for those remittances to take place in a really, really convenient fashion. Yes?
Yeah, so what people were doing was and I believe happens in South Africa as well.
Buy
an airtime voucher, scratch off the code, write the code into an SMS message, send that back to their family in the rural areas, and
then
what started to happen?
Then they'd sell those codes, right?
Shopkeepers in those areas started to accept those codes
as
currency.
Cash, for sure.
And they would then sell them on. And I think the British Department for International Development was doing some work with Safaricom at the time, looking at how to do money transfers via mobile, and they sort of saw this and went, actually, the problem's already been solved. It is a primary example of ground up innovation. You know, people are doing this. The problem's solved. All we've got to do is formalise it and
maybe make it more convenient than having to buy an airtime voucher.
And a bit more secure. You know, you can't resell on the M-Pesa vouchers and everything. They have M-Pesa agents and everything. Now, M-Pesa has moved on. It's a lot more complicated than that. It's bigger than that now. And stores accept M-Pesa. You can pay for your
electricity bills. It's evolved into a way that people pay for even their taxi cabs in Kenya using it. Yeah,
and indeed in Tanzania, it's even more popular. And you see figures bound around, but Kenya and Tanzania, both countries now are doing around about 50% of their GDP in mobile money solutions like M-Pesa. But they've all of them failed to take off in South Africa. M-Pesa was launched here in 2010 and with the backing of Vodacom, which, of course, is the sister company to Safaricom through the Vodafone.
I think
group.
Nedbank was the banking partner they were
with the backing of Nedbank. And it didn't really work in a South African context. And nobody was quite sure why. There's a lot of reasons. One, you know, people here don't really trust mobile money at all. They prefer cash
far bigger population,
widely accepted as an observation.
Also, a far bigger proportion of the population is banked here than what it is in Kenya, right?
No, there is. I mean, there is still.
Although there's a huge, huge unbanked population in South Africa, you know, it's not as big a problem as what it was in Kenya.
Yeah,
apparently.
It's not as big a problem. I mean, the figures say that it's about 9 million adults of working age, which is about 60% of the employable population, which is big. I mean, that is a big proportion, but you know, there are other ways and means of people transferring money. You've got companies like NetOne here who are doing big mobile money operations with the mining companies, with their payment cards and things like that. The supermarkets are starting to issue their own Visa cards and MasterCards and stuff. So it's a more mature, complex market. So M-Pesa didn't work here. Let's cut a long story short, too late. Vodacom even have decided to give it one more go, and they're putting a fair amount of resource behind it this time. It's a big, high-profile launch. They're not partnered with Nedbank anymore. They're partnered up with Bidvest. I believe it all should go operational today or yesterday.
Is there an easier way of remitting? Because that was the other big challenge. It was like converting money back, you know, this mobile money back into cash was quite a challenge in South Africa, in that you needed to go into a Nedbank branch, you needed to remit that, you needed to convert, you know, that way. And there was a fairly sizable fee for doing that, which I think dissuaded a large portion of the market from doing it. So have they smoothed that process out?
Yeah, and I think that's the big difference this time. First of all, they've got a lot more people on board from a business point of view.
So they've
already got 3,000 informal traders and spaza shops signed up.
Oh, wow, nice.
Selling vouchers, and that's through their network of airtime retailers. And then they've got the Fashini Group and the Vodacom stores on board selling airtime vouchers.
Great,
in retail.
Cool.
So in total, there's about 8,000 outlets for getting money into your M-Pesa account. To get money out, there's still you can either visit an agent and get money out by generating a code on your phone, or they've introduced a piece of plastic as well. So there's a Visa card that can be linked to your
account,
and that can be used in ATMs or
Fantastic.
At shops. So I think this time it actually has a really strong opportunity to work. I mean, and price wise, I have got the tariff sheet, but I haven't got them in front of me here. But it's quite reasonable. I think it does work out cheaper than going through a traditional bank to put money in and out. It's not free, of course. I mean,
there needs to be a bank charge. Absolutely,
there are charges for every transaction and so on. But they are small. They're like one rand, and then
because they were like in the region of like $50. I remember for some of them, you know, when it launched initially, and it was never going to take off for that reason. Of course, you know, the big stumbling block with the last launch was also the fact that you required access to a banking branch in order to convert the money back into cash, and that doesn't work in rural areas. You need to have the informal sector, informal trading sector involved in both the process of selling the mobile money and converting it back into cash.
And there's I mean, some of the stuff, I think as a service, I think it's good. I think what they're doing is exactly the right thing. I think the difficulty is still that there is a lot of competition in this area in South Africa. Every bank has its own mobile money solution, and MTN has recently announced their own partnership with MasterCard. It's going to be very, very competitive, and whether it succeeds or not will, to be honest, largely come down to marketing. But in the background, there is some very clever stuff going on that I'm quite impressed with. So for the Visa card, for example, it's not a full FICA process to get that. Because it's a limited-use Visa card, you can walk into a supermarket, buy it off the shelf, and you will automatically be FICA'd through your mobile phone account.
It's not a credit card, all right? It'll have money in it, yes, for sure.
But what's nice is that if you do want to use it as a full bank card and have access to services FICA approval, you can then take that and have it properly fully approved. And they're talking about ways that in the future they'll be able to do cross-border payments as well, and that's more important really between Kenya and Tanzania, where you've got a lot of migrant workers moving across the border there and people want to send money home. But I think Bidvest are really pushing the various regulators and trying to get people together to facilitate that process, and they're looking at a similar model to what they've done with the FICA in the cards. You know, is there a way around money laundering laws for small amounts. So if you're only transferring, you know, a couple of $100 at a time, obviously for a drug dealer to be using that system to launder money is going to take a long time and become quite noticeable.
Absolutely.
So it's interesting times. Interesting times.
Well, let's hope it works. I really think it's an idea and it's a model with a lot of potential. I think that it was launched incorrectly in South Africa the first time. Hopefully they've learned some lessons from it. And it now does really, really well in the market. It clearly has a use.
I personally think the biggest barrier to uptake of mobile money here is just the fact that we have a lot of ATMs.
Yes.
Cash is really easy to come by. You don't struggle to get cash out.
For sure.
And I think that makes for informal trading and remitting money a lot easier than it does in other countries.
Absolutely. Neotel is South Africa's first converged communications network operator. It provides a range of value-added voice, internet and data services for enterprise, wholesale and retail customers in Southern Africa. Powered by Neotel's high-performance fiber optic backbone, its next-generation network challenges the status quo, making communications simpler and inspiring you to the next level. For more information, call 0860-NEOTEL, that's 636-835, or visit www.neotel.co.za. Neotel, inspiring possibilities. Well, there you go. Something else that was really, really interesting that broke in the past day or two was the availability of the internet.org app in Zambia. Now, the first question I've got is, why only Zambia? And that's probably because Airtel has partnered with Facebook, and internet.org, of course, is the altruistic arm of Facebook. What I think is really, really cool about this is the fact that it's an application that gives you access to a whole bunch of basic services that are zero rated. And that is really, really cool. So you're looking at it, it's, you know, right now it's a Android application, from what I understand. It's only available on Android, right? Charlie, you've been quite close to the story?
Yes, so far it's only on Android.
Okay, cool. And what will happen is you download the applications, it's 800K, you know, you can either find it in the App Store, from what I understand, inside Google Play, or you can go to the internet.org website, download it for your smartphone. Apparently, it'll also work on a feature phone web browser, which is interesting. We need to kind of take a look into that. But what I like about that, you know, this is the fact that it zero rates some critical data. And I'm going to start with the most critical stuff because, you know, the press release and everything else, of course, lists the frivolous crap right at the top. And this is far more important, that you can do Google searches with it for free. You can do Wikipedia searches and read internal wiki stories using that. AccuWeather, really, really important. Easy library to learn about Zambian government information. Okay, Facts for Life by UNICEF. There's a whole list. Of course, there's some fun stuff too, which I think is far more important. Not far more important, but I think it's going to be really, really important in terms of getting people into it, and that's going to be Facebook and Facebook Messenger, all right? And let's face it, Facebook has to get their little bit of value out of it because it's something benevolent they're doing for the community. It'll be interesting to see whether it comes into other African countries and stuff like that. But really, really cool. Very similar to, I think, some stuff that's been going on and some pressure that's being placed on local operators to zero rate Wikipedia traffic in South Africa, correct?
Well, funnily enough, there is a local angle to this as well. Because two of the app functions were developed by the Prekult Foundation right here in Johannesburg.
Oh, fantastic. They're like the kings of mobile, hey? Prekult makes such rad stuff.
I mean, when it comes to USSD or feature phone stuff and NGO involvement, I mean, they're always there. They are one of the hidden champions of this. Nobody's ever heard of them, but they do amazing work.
Yes,
everywhere.
For sure.
That's going to get back to them, isn't it? They can hear this. Sorry about that, Prekult Foundation. but I was actually talking to one of their lead developers on Wednesday night, just before the announcement was made, and he was saying that they've built the maternal health app and the Facts for Life app, and that it definitely is Zambia. It really is just the start. I mean, they're not entirely sure why they started in Zambia, and I think the
probably got to do with the fact that Airtel was a little bit more receptive to the concept of zero rating data.
But they are looking at not just an African. African coverage, but pan-global as well. I mean, they're looking at India and South America.
It's so incredibly important. You know what? I was joking earlier about the Facebook Messenger stuff, but I think that's critical, all right? It's like having WhatsApp, but it's free. Okay, and that's going to be massively important. Data connection, zero-rated data connection, using Facebook Messenger. Who cares whether Facebook's going to shove ads in your face? You're going to have the ability to communicate with anyone else for free. That's going to be extremely cool.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, it sounds frivolous, but I mean, Facebook's also a source of news.
Absolutely. Well, this is the thing. This is the thing. We're starting to discover that in our business, is that Facebook's a massive, massive portion of our ability to get news out to the market. So cool. Let's hope it goes elsewhere, and let's hope it continues to evolve. Charlie, scare me with a story. This is something I pitched up on HTXT Africa yesterday. USB exploits turn keyboards into weapons of destruction. So we're really talking about viri, on USB flash sticks that do dodgy stuff when plugged into your computer.
It's a little bit more complicated than that. Well, really, it depends on your view. It's not really a virus.
Okay.
It's hackers who've managed to exploit the firmware.
Wow.
Reprogram, not even exploit, just reprogram the firmware on stuff like webcams, keyboards, anything that uses firmware that you plug into your PC. So once it gets plugged into your PC, it kickstarts the firmware. And it pretty much controls your PC, and it can, like, specifically...
No, you control the keyboard and mouse. Sorry, welcome to zombie land, right? This is a zombie PC.
Yes, effectively. In the case of a keyboard, what it would do is send out malicious code from that PC using the keyboard as a means.
Sure. So it could very well, you know, provide for the ability to accept remote commands from the hacker.
Yeah.
That hacker could be sending out malicious emails, spam, whatever the case is, to people, can be using the keyboard then to hack other aspects of the system. Webcam, it becomes something that you're going to want to unplug probably, because it's going to be recording you at the most inappropriate moments, right? And then probably auctioning those videos and those pictures back to you, right, for cash.
No, probably. Well... let's say probably, but I don't think it's specifically device related, like a webcam will spy on you. It just needs that connection to your PC.
Oh, to start passing stuff to the system.
So it could be doing anything, you know?
Scary. So there have been examples of this in practice, right?
Yes. There has been. Let me just try and find it now. There are some scientists.
So the security research labs in Berlin, right?
Yes, they actually developed part of it.
So they're white hats, right? So these guys, it's a proof of concept showing that this kind of stuff's going on and this is how it's going to happen, right?
Yes, but the thing about it, even though it's just a proof of concept, there's actually nothing that you can do to stop it.
Wow.
That's the big thing. You can't detect it. It's virtually impossible to detect right now. And the only way that you can...
It's multi-platform.
Yeah, exactly. And the only way that you can disinfect a device is by not even reformatting. You have to reinstall the original firmware onto that device. And the average person, if they don't know how to do that, they're pretty much going to be screwed. And you're going to pass it on from person to person to person.
Wow. Norton and Kaspersky and all of these guys are rubbing their hands with glee, of course, because now there's a whole different level of protection they've got to start providing for. The fact that every single piece of software that attempts to write a piece of firmware to anything in your computer now needs to pass through a firewall. So now you have a device firewall that they're going to come up with next.
Yeah.
That's pretty scary stuff, right?
And just out of interest for the people that want to read up more about it or go check it out, it's called Bad USB is the exploit.
Bad USB, yes, indeed. I'd agree. That is a bad USB.
There's actually a very nice quote from Carsten Knoll, who's the chief scientist, and he says every time you plug a USB into your computer, it's kind of like standing up saying, I'm going to walk away for 10 minutes. Please don't do anything evil to my PC. And just walking away.
Well, the scary bit for me is that all of the stuff can be happening in the background and you don't know. You're just using your computer normally.
Yep.
Wow.
Scary stuff.
Okay, cool. One or two more stories that I thought were kind of interesting that we should cover quickly. Gauteng school becomes first recipient of one laptop per child in SA. This one stuck out for me mainly, and I'm sure it did the same to you, Adam, in that wasn't the OLPC campaign and project dead a couple of years ago?
Well, no, not a couple of years ago. I mean, it was back in March. They sort of stealth closed their hardware development lab in Cambridge in the UK.
What was the dude's name? He had one of the coolest names, the dude that ran the OLP.
Oh, Nicholas Negroponte.
Nicholas Negroponte. He was on the cover of Wired, I'm sure.
He was one of the founders of Wired, I think you're right.
Amazing chap. But
I don't think he has much involvement with OLPC these days. And obviously, it came in for a lot of criticism over time, but the biggest problem they found was that there's no real need for it anymore. But now you've got tablets for less than a thousand rand. What's the need for an OLPC? So, quite sensibly, they kind of declared internally that mission over. Cheap hardware is ubiquitous, and as a result of people sort of finding out, they closed this office in Cambridge. They said basically that they were going to shift to being a software company and focus on educational apps
makes sense.
The idea that we've suddenly got OLPCs appearing in South Africa is a little bit comical, really.
Well, I mean, I think it's a bit laggy. I always felt that the OLPC project and the whole campaign was flawed in the fact that it was entering a market that was massively aggressive. It was partnering with people that should have gotten them somewhere but didn't. It was very, very ambitious in that it would aim to like literally put one laptop on every child's desk or in every laptop, a child's hands. And it was really mostly about what was going on in the back office, the ability to smooth out those production lines, get the build costs down, while at the same time keeping the quality of the device high and that kind of thing. Sad that it's no longer around, but I think we actually have to credit them with the fact that they managed to change a mindset. They were entering a market where nobody was talking about this kind of thing, and they managed to put it on everybody's agenda and everybody's radar scope, and probably pave the way for a lot of the education-focused projects that exist today. Right.
Well, I think it's not just the education projects. I mean, you've got to remember that if it wasn't for OLPC, we wouldn't have netbooks. I mean, Intel was developing the Atom and the
in response,
small laptop.
They were
original partner. That was the netbook as was when it was launched.
I know that it ended up being AMD at the end, and that's where things started really falling to pieces because no one could get along.
I think what essentially happened was Intel realized they could make a lot of money from it without doing it for
sure.
I forget the exact details, but no. If it wasn't for OLPC, we wouldn't have had netbooks and probably the proliferation of tablet devices afterwards, because they kind of kick-started the low cost. Small form factor computer.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think, nonetheless, pretty cool, and it's worth mentioning that the Masi Bambane Junior Primary School in Orange Farm became the first recipients in South Africa of 250 OLPC XOs, the 7.5-inch tablets. So I think that's really, really cool. And I'm sure that there's going to be a couple more that will roll out over the next while as the project starts winding down. But knowing about kids getting PCs in a underprivileged school for me just makes my heart happy. So it does have a feel good element, but it's probably worth noting that OLPC is no longer around. One more interesting little educational story to round up with, and then we'll call it the end of this episode. But the something that has nothing to do with tech, but I thought kind of cool anyway, something to do with education. Free learner's license lessons for Gauteng grade 11s as of 2015, which I think is kind of cool. So grade 11 students will begin learning the K53 from 2015 onwards. And Hells, if you have driven in Joburg recently, people need driver's licenses. People need formal driving lessons. Adam, I'm sure you'll agree. Every day he comes into the office bitching about somebody cutting him off in traffic and nearly trying to kill him. So
I think we should just take off and nuke him from orbit.
Nice. Nice. Well, there you go.
It's the only way.
That was the first episode of the HTXT AfriCast. We hope to bring you one of these every single day, weekday at least, for the next however long we can carry on doing this. Thanks for joining us and hanging out. If you want to give us some feedback, maybe send through some story ideas or whatever the case is, feel free to send us a mail at podcast@htxt.co.za, and we'll try and try and at least include those kinds of angles in the podcast when we do. If you have any questions you'd like and stuff you'd like us to read out in the podcast, definitely send them on and we will do our best to do so. But in the meantime, have a good weekend and we will catch you on Monday. Cheers.
The HDXT AfriCast is sponsored by Neotel, South Africa's first converged communications network operator. Neotel, inspiring possibilities.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.